Hi, I'm Larry Reed, and you're listening to the Libertarian Christian Podcast.
Welcome to the show that gets Christians thinking about faith and politics. Get ready to challenge the status quo, expand your imagination, and tackle controversy head on. Let's stand together at the intersection of faith and freedom. It's time for the Libertarian Christian Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute. I'm Doug Stewart, and today I have a special episode for you, and the guest is me, actually kinda sorta. In April, I was a guest on the Read Hour on the Loving Liberty podcast, and if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, they were kind enough to allow us to replay it here on our podcast. We talked about democratic socialism, what is LCI up to. I tell a little bit of my story of how I became a Christian libertarian and some of the reasons behind that. So take a listen and enjoy my conversation with Larry Reed.
Welcome back to the Read Hour on the Loving Liberty Network. This is your host, Lawrence Reed. Please call me Larry. Our website at the Foundation for Economic Education is fee.org. And by the way, I should make mention of the fact that this is my last week as president of FEE after 11 years. I will assume the duties as president emeritus beginning next week, and we'll have a new president. That's something that's been in the works for a long time. Doesn't change anything with regard to our program here, but it is a big change for me and for my staff here at FEE. I have a guest today that I want you folks to know, and also to know the website of the organization he comes from. His name is Doug Stewart. He is the CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, or LCI. Their website is easy to remember, libertarianchristians.com. That's libertarianchristians.com. I urge you to give it a look. Doug holds a Master of Divinity degree from Biblical Seminary and works as a freelance video producer and graphic designer. Welcome to the Read Hour, Doug.
Thank you, Larry. I'm excited to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you. And we share so many ideas and principles together, both you and I, as well as our two respective organizations. Before we talk about the Libertarian Christian Institute, Doug, how about telling us about your personal journey? And I'm thinking in terms of your Christian beliefs, your political philosophy, and the intersection of those two.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a pretty conservative home. We were conservative theologically, we were conservative politically, and I pretty much kind of bought into all of that. And then I got to college and, you know, 9/11 happened. And, you know, I had kind of assumed that America was founded as a Christian nation and it had sort of lost its way and we should be a Christian nation. And so, of course, at that time, I was excited that George W. Bush was just, you know, a fine Christian man who is now leading us as president. And then 9/11 happened. And it occurred to me pretty quickly that if we were a Christian nation following the words of Jesus to turn the other cheek, there would be a very different foreign policy than the one people were calling for. And I didn't quite see what that could have been. But it started me down this road of, maybe politics, maybe I've been thinking about my politics in sort of the wrong way. And then, you know, I left college and I kept, you know, my theological journey. And I started realizing that, you know, if the gospel was so important to the world, that it wasn't really just about individuals and what happens to them after they die. I don't want to undermine that on the one hand. On the other, it's like, well, are we just here to bide our time? And I started realizing that the gospel had a lot to say about this world and a lot of application in this life. And that, of course, included what do Christians have to say with respect to politics? And so if the church is transforming the world, then somehow the world must be transformed. And therefore, that somehow leads into politics. The issue that I kind of saw was, while I was sort of, I would say, going a little bit more progressive in my theological leanings, everything that they said was just downright, you know, far left progressive politics in terms of like what they wanted the government to do. And I just felt a little unsettled. I'm like, that doesn't quite seem like the direction I feel comfortable going. And so I decided I would, you know, kind of learn some economics. Well, at the same time I was doing all this, I was actually a big fan of Glenn Beck. Much to my wife's chagrin, I loved his sense of humor. And I, you know, listened to him a lot. And he kept saying that he was a libertarian at heart. Mm-hmm. Now, in retrospect, I hope that he's become more libertarian at heart than he seemed to be. But it didn't seem to me that he was very consistent when I started discovering what libertarianism was. And he would have Ron Paul on as a guest on his show. And way early on, I thought Ron Paul was crazy. And then when I started realizing I need to learn some economics, well, of course, I turned to some things that Ron Paul recommended that led me to places like the Mises Institute. And it led me to Fee University podcasts that I listened to. This is probably a decade and a half ago. And so my journey went into economics. I would actually feel comfortable saying that I feel like the Holy Spirit led me to, you know, kind of pause me from becoming too progressive, so to speak, and and say, hey, you need to learn some economics. If you're going to have anything to say about how society should operate, maybe some economics would be good. So, you know, people like Bob Murphy, Milton Friedman, Fee stuff, Mises Academy, and then, of course, libertarianchristians.com. And I became friends with Norman from a distance. You know, I'm in Pennsylvania. He was in Texas at the time. Mm-hmm. Then I became a regular contributor. It just seemed to me in, you know, thinking back of my, you know, Glenn Beck libertarian at heart sort of mindset, it's like he just wasn't consistent. And I really wanted to find something that felt consistent with the things I thought about with respect to theology and Christian living. And it just felt like libertarianism was that most consistent expression.
You mentioned Ron Paul. I'm happy to say I've known him personally for 35, maybe 40 years. And he served on the board of Fee in the 1980s. And his son, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, is also a good friend. You mentioned that 9/11 had such a pivotal impact on you, a galvanizing moment that led to a shift in your political thinking. I'm curious if you could explain for us, at that time, you said that it changed your ideas on foreign policy. Was it foreign policy that preceded 9/11 that you became most critical of, or was it the response, President Bush, to it, or was it both?
Well, I think it was in that first week, something didn't sit right with me with this whole, like, we will retaliate and we will, you know, bring these people to justice. Now, I'm not against justice. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but Ron Paul apparently proposed a solution for getting justice that did not require intervention. But here's what I was more precisely thinking was, if George W. Bush was a Christian, he would get in front of the camera and say, we're a Christian nation and we are going to forgive our enemies and we're going to pray for them because they want to persecute us and we are not going to stoop to their level and become terrorists ourselves, or something along those lines. And now that I think about it, looking back, I'm like, I'm actually surprised I thought of that back then, because I was pretty steeped to conservatism and was pretty, you know, pro-military in that sort of sense.
That would have been a tough pill for many Americans to swallow at the time. They wanted to go after the perpetrators for sure.
Yeah. Well, I didn't tell anybody about my thoughts until later, so I didn't get in any trouble with any of my friends.
Now, tell us about the Libertarian Christian Institute. Brian's giving me the 2-minute warning, so maybe we can only begin that discussion and then we'll resume after the break. What is the Libertarian Christian Institute's mission and what does it do?
Yeah, so our mission is to equip Christians to make the Christian case for a free society. It feels sort of a niche in the liberty movement because it reaches out to those who are Christians with a message of liberty rather than just the general message of liberty in sort of a rhetorical and argument for why should we should have a free society, a pro-capitalist argument. We do that from a Christian perspective. It was the website, libertarianchristians.com, sort of predates LCI. And it was founded back in 2008 by Norman Horn. It was his way to express thoughts about liberty from a Christian perspective. And it just, the movement kind of grew. He got a post in the Washington Post. And then we had some conferences and it was time to become an institute. And so we became LCI about 4 years ago in 2015.
Ah, fantastic. I know Norman Horn and he invited me once to give a talk at a conference he had in Texas. I can't remember what city, but I remember thinking, wow, where has this organization been? We've needed something like this for a long, long time. So I really celebrate the fact that LCI exists and it's growing and serving a real need out there and filling a niche. We got a few seconds before the break. Doug, if you want to add something.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of resources on our website, and we'll talk here in a few minutes about some of the different aspects of our platform and how we want to equip the church to communicate that message.
Okay, we'll be back with Doug Stewart from the Libertarian Christian Institute after this break. Welcome back to the Reed Hour. This is Lawrence Reed, your host, and my guest today is Doug Stewart. He's the CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, LCI. Their website is libertarianchristians.com. And we've been talking about the Institute and its work. We just started that part of our discussion before the break. Doug, why don't you pick up where we left off and tell us more about LCI, its mission, and what it does?
Yeah, I mean, we exist to make the Christian case for a free society and give the church content that to proclaim that libertarianism is the most consistent expression of Christian political thought. As I mentioned before the break, it was something of me that I wanted my faith and my politics to be consistent in a number of ways, and one of those ways was to become a Christian libertarian or libertarian Christian. I kind of use those interchangeably. So we want to persuade Christians that our faith inclines us toward principles of individual liberty and free markets. That would be the big overall.
If you look at the words of Jesus themselves, you'll never find a moment where he says anything that would endorse the initiation of force against another person.
Yeah, in fact, the kingdom of God grows like a mustard seed. It doesn't get plowed under by violence, and it doesn't, like, you can't make something grow through violence. And I mean, that's a really important aspect to understand, that Jesus never endorsed violence in any way. And so, you know, if we kind of follow that ethic, we realize that we can't also then outsource the violent coercion to another institution.
Right. Now, how does the Libertarian Christian Institute do its work? Do you hold seminars? Of course, you have a very robust website. Maybe some other things you could tell us about.
Yeah, we have several major parts to our platform, major pillars to our platform. We actually have a podcast. We are at over 100 episodes. We hit 100 episodes at the beginning of 2019 here. And we do a weekly podcast that comes out every Monday morning. And so we have, you know, a lot of guests on there. We've had Tom Woods, Larry, you've been on, people like Deirdre McCluskey, Mike Munger, Russ Roberts, Jason Brennan. We've even had Sean Malone from Fee to talk about media. We talk about a lot of things on our podcast. That's probably one of the most major ongoing things that we do. Another thing that we have is we actually have an academic journal called the Christian Libertarian Review, and we're about to release volume 2 of that. And that actually has its own website, although you can get to it from our website. It's christianlibertarianreview.com. So we have those. We also have our ongoing blog where we have articles and commentary on current events. We try to keep our commentary evergreen so that it doesn't matter when you stumble across our website. It's not going to feel like you're reading an article from 2008, because we want everything to be relevant a decade later. So we do have a lot of content there. We try to get a couple articles out per week on that. We have done seminars in the past. We've had the opportunity to figure out, how do we bring people from all over the country into one area? And the problem there, of course, is, you know, you have to plan something big for people to want to come to it. And so we're kind of figuring out what we want to do in the future for things like conferences and where we can be. And so we might be doing more of those in the future. But we did actually have a couple in the past where I think you were at one of them, and we met there, I think, for the very first time.
Yeah, I think that was in Austin, if I remember correctly.
Or... That's exactly where it was.
Ah, okay. You have a project in the works called, Call to Freedom, right?
Yeah,
maybe you could tell us about that before the break.
Yeah, sure. So Call to Freedom was a book published about 2 years ago, and it was written by a group of 6 young libertarians, and it was edited by Elise Daniel, and the foreword was written by Norman Horn, and it was published under Wipfenstock. And it's a little over 120 pages, I believe, if I recall correctly. And one of the things that LCI had the opportunity to do was acquire the copyright to produce the audiobook. Ooh. And so we are just about wrapping up the final quality control on the audiobook, and it'll be released probably within the next month. And we are really excited about that, because we know we have a good podcast fit listener base, and we also want people to be able to listen to audiobook content. And so Call to Freedom was written, like I said, by 6 different individuals. It's one of those books that I delayed reading because I thought I knew what was in it. And then I read it and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm not as, I have way more to learn about being a Christian libertarian than I thought. And, you know, for anybody out there who is maybe not, you know, totally sold on libertarianism from a Christian view, this one might tip you over the fence and say, ah, yes, it can work. You can be a Christian and a libertarian. And so they even discuss at length certain biblical passages like Romans 13, where, you know, everybody brings up, well, what about Romans 13? That's like the Christian version of, well, what about the roads for the broader libertarian? It's like, well, what about Romans 13? And so they tackle that as well, and also tackle a lot of objections. It's a really solid book. The audiobook clocks in around 6.5 hours.
Oh, wow. One of the authors, as I recall, of Call to Freedom is Jason Huey, right?
Yes, that's correct. Jason, he wrote the longest chapter.
Yeah, he a great guy. He was an intern one summer here at FEE, I think about 2012, maybe. Good guy. And so I hardly recommend that book. I assume people can access it through your website or maybe even buy a hard copy online.
Yeah, so you can buy a copy of the paperback on Amazon, of course. But if you go to calledtofreedombook.com, that's calledtofreedombook.com, you will see our landing page. You'll be able to sign up for our newsletter. And of course, we're excited to tell everybody once it's out. And so therefore, you'll also get that alert that Call to Freedom audiobook is available for download. It will become available on Audible. And I believe we're also going to sell it directly from our site.
Oh, that's great. Now, you have written yourself quite a lot for the LibertarianChristians.com website. What have you got in the works in the next few weeks that we should be looking for?
Yeah, well, I don't have any articles I'm working on, but I do have one. I know we want to talk about democratic socialism. There's a series of articles that's going to come out on democratic socialism by one of our writers, Jamin Huebner, and I've just reviewed them all myself, you know, to kind of prepare them for posting. And they're just phenomenal. They really take the issue seriously. It doesn't just write off people's claims. I mean, I tend to have somewhat of a, I don't know, blithe attitude about democratic socialism. I roll my eyes a lot when I see people make such arguments. But Jamin, you know, he took it seriously and said, well, wait, what about this? And maybe we should reconsider this a little bit. But then, of course, he takes on a little bit more critical approach to it. So there's a series of articles coming out on that.
Oh, fantastic. When will they begin?
I don't have those planned, but probably later this week, if not early next week.
Hey, fantastic. This is very timely, given the fact that it seems like half the field of presidential candidates on the Democratic side have openly endorsed one version of democratic socialism or another. And so it promises to be a big issue over the next year and a half before the November 2020 presidential election.
Yeah, it is a pretty important issue. And I think, believe it or not, unwittingly, I think Republicans are going to end up embracing elements of it as well, because they eventually end up endorsing some sort of socialism in some fashion. So, you know, they're very overt about it on the Democratic Party. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but at least you know what they're about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so sad that quite often the best that some Republicans can do is to offer socialism light, you know, instead of actually opposing socialism at its core and on principle. They say, well, if you put us in charge, we'll do something similar, but we'll just do it somehow more efficiently or a little less of it. But they undermine the basic premise for liberty when they buy into the democratic socialist agenda.
Yeah, and what's most annoying about that to me is that they give lip service to liberty and individualism, and they just undermine it through their actual actions.
Yeah. Yeah, you look at spending, just spending alone. You'd think that when Republicans control at least one of the two houses and the presidency, if not all three, that we get some restraint in government spending. But it seems like it just continues to soar no matter which party is in control.
Yeah, I mean, it's been several decades that I've been paying attention to politics more closely, and there are several issues that they seem to be about, but don't really seem to actually do anything about.
Yeah. Well, Doug, we've got about a minute left, and when we come back after the break, I certainly want to return to this issue of democratic socialism. It's a big one, and we need to focus on that a bit more. So in the meantime, let me just remind our listeners that we are talking to Doug Stewart. He's the CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, LCI. Their website is libertarianchristians.com. He holds a Master of Divinity degree from Biblical Seminary and works as a freelance video producer and graphic designer. They're doing great work at the Libertarian Christian Institute, and after the break, we'll resume our discussion with Doug Stewart. We are back on the Reed Hour on the Loving Liberty Network. This is your host, Lawrence Reed, and I'm talking today to Doug Stewart, CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, whose website is libertarianchristians.com. Doug, before the break, we were talking about a fad, hopefully of simply the moment, not a long-term one, of people embracing the notion of democratic socialism. This is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. As you know, I've written an essay called Was Jesus a Socialist? And I claim he was emphatically not. I assume you would agree with that.
Oh, most certainly would agree, Larry. Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with democratic socialism from your perspective? I mean, democracy, isn't that a good thing? And socialism, isn't that nothing more than helping people, sharing stuff with them and giving them free things?
Well, it sounds really good, except when you really start thinking about the mechanisms of it, it requires coercion and violence by an institution that you can't get out of unless you like leave the country or something like that. So, you know, it's pretty unfortunate that there's like all these really good ideals that they want to embody. And I think a lot of Christian progressives will look to the early church, will look to the community that was formed around the Jesus movement in the first century. And they say, ah, see, that's what community should look like. And what they don't realize is what I think, you know, Friedrich Hayek would say, maybe I'm sort of paraphrasing my way of putting it, is like there's a scalability problem. And you can't, you know, you can have small communities take on and embody the kind of principles of sharing and giving and cooperating and things like that. But you can't scale that to something like the federal level of the United States government, because now you're getting into what the Bible calls empire. And that's really a big problem, because that has to deal with the concentration of power into the hands of a few.
You know, if you just listen carefully to the proposals of democratic socialists like Bernie Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they're not special requests or helpful advice. I mean, these are proposals time and again down the list that are compulsory, that require the use of force. It's really mystifying to me how people seem to embrace democratic socialism without understanding that at its core is this involuntary, mandated use of force and coercion. That's the central feature of socialism that differentiates it from, say, capitalism, right? It's the initiation of force against people.
Yeah, and I think there's a deep problem. And, you know, on my most uncharitable moments about democratic socialism, it's just like, man, they seem oblivious to the mechanism by how the world has gotten richer over the past several decades, or, you know, to kind of fit it into the framework, the last 200 years of progress. And they seem pretty ungrateful about it, because all they keep talking about is other people's money.
Yeah.
You know, you and I know this. The global poor are getting richer. They're getting richer at a rapid rate. And all the progressives can do is talk about how much they want to take the wealth of those who are enriched first.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I just know that what's going to happen if you have free markets and free people, the world will get better.
Yeah. You alluded to the fact that they're always talking about money. That is ironic, isn't it? Because that's a criticism that they lob in our direction. Those of us who believe in things like freedom, free markets, capitalism, we're accused of being the people always focused on green eye shade stuff, you know, the bottom line, money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you listen to them and all they talk about is our money that they want to take to give to other people for various things. I mean, who's really focused on money here?
Yeah.
People like you and I, we're talking about compassion, volunteerism, self-help, civil society, people helping people. And yet it's the socialists who are always talking about the money they want to take and redistribute.
And it's always other people's money. It's not their own. I always tell them, hey, you know what? You can give more to the treasury if you want to. If you think the debt is such a big problem, because they didn't about 3 years ago. If you think the debt, the deficit and the debt are a big problem, then why don't you give a little bit more? They don't have an answer to that.
No. And here's something else they don't have an answer to. Arthur Brooks of the American Enterprise Institute authored a book some years ago, zeroing in on who gives. In fact, that's the title, I think, of the book, focusing on where do charitable contributions to noble causes tend to come from. And you'd think that socialists would be big givers to all kinds of humanitarian endeavors. But quite the opposite is the case. It's libertarians, it's conservatives, it's people who believe in freedom who take the responsibility more than anybody else to personally support worthy causes, not the socialists who are always the bleeding heart types, but don't put their own money where their mouth is.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a statistic that comes out. I think one thing that I would add about that is that it's not an either or that you have government coercion or voluntary charity to resolve the needs of people who have less, that resolve the real needs that we see out there in society, because there is a third option, and that is that wealth expansion, and that is only done through free markets. You know, you and I don't subscribe to a fixed pie fallacy where there's only X amount of wealth out there. You and I know that trade creates wealth, and as if we keep trading more, and by that I don't mean some sort of Keynesian consumption idea, but if we enable trade and we allow people to innovate and create better and more efficient things, we will expand that pie. And there is no pie, but we will expand what's there. And it's not something that, you know, people like progressives kind of see. They see things as a fixed pie. And so we know the recipe for success in the world in which everybody has what they need, which is, you know, a lot of Christian socialists, progressive Christians will want things like healthcare for all and a fair wage, a minimum income, fair treatment, things like that. And it's like, you know what? Compared to where we came from before capitalism, we're well on our way there, and we didn't need any of your programs to make us do it.
I've always thought that one of the strongest cases for freedom and free markets is the fact that those things are natural. They are what happen when you leave people alone, whereas socialism is a kind of human contrivance that varies from one schemer or dreamer to another. They're always thinking up some kind of Rube Goldberg contraption to seize wealth as if it's just there for the taking and then redistribute it according to the way they think it should be given out. It's artificial. It's unnatural. It's not what happens when you leave people alone. It's what happens when you put people in positions where they have the power, the political power, to push others around.
Yeah. And I think that one of the legitimate concerns I think progressives might have is that you don't want people to have concentrated power. But the only thing that they focus on are people like Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates or Tim Cook or whomever it might be that has so much money that they just, you know, they're like, oh, I want their money. And so that's what they focus on. And they don't realize that it's the same. Like, this is what libertarians are saying about the state, is that you're wanting to enable an institution that has a monopoly over violence in a given, you know, jurisdiction. You want to give them the power to break up what you think is a bad monopoly, who you think has too much money. I'm like, you're just enabling the same thing. And so, you know, I can understand their concern of, you know, somebody having so much economic power. The issue for me is that it's not the kind of power that is destructive. Jeff Bezos is not bombing countries. He's not running, as far as I know, he's not running a deficit to fund things that are immoral and unethical. But, you know, progressives and democratic socialists, they want the state to be the monopoly that Amazon is. I think they're just jealous. They just want to have the power that they think Amazon has or something like that.
They're jealous of the very people who create the wealth that they themselves, in most cases, don't know how to create and simply have fanciful schemes to redistribute. If I didn't like Jeff Bezos, I just wouldn't read the Washington Post and I wouldn't buy from Amazon. And end of story. He has no power over me or anybody else in that sense. Well, Doug, we're down to about a minute or so. Is there one last thing you would like our listeners to know about libertarianchristians.com or the Libertarian Christian Institute?
I think the thing that everyone would love to know about LCI is that we work very hard to produce materials that will help Christians communicate the message of liberty. And what we want to do is make sure that they feel comfortable in their families, their churches, small groups, any kind of environment where the Christians they're around might be somewhat either hostile or even just like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you believe that. We want them to be able to communicate and reach out to the church. So, that's why we exist. You can read our core values on our website, libertarianchristians.com/mission, and you can see our mission and core values. We have a list of five things that we believe every Christian libertarian ought to be able to embrace.
That's great, Doug. And to all that you've said, I want to mention to our listeners that if you're interested in reading that essay I alluded to earlier called Was Jesus a Socialist? You can find that on our website at fee.org, F-E-E.org. We've been talking to Doug Stewart, the CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, whose website, again, is libertarianchristians.com. Doug, it's been great to have you as my guest today. I appreciate the time and the wisdom you've offered us, and best wishes for continued success at the Institute.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Larry.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast. If you liked today's episode, we encourage you to rate us on Apple Podcasts to help expand our audience. If you want to reach out to us, email us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. You can also reach us at LCI Official on Twitter. And of course, we are on Facebook and have an active group you are welcome to join. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The Libertarian Christian Podcast is a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, a registered 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to find out more about LCI, visit us on the web at libertarianchristians.com. The voiceovers are by Matt Bellis and Catherine Williams. As of episode 115, our audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.
I used to tease my listeners in Southern Utah about Glenn Beck. Because it's such a heavy Mormon population there, I would always just refer to him as, well, you know, Brother Beck said this or Brother Beck said that. And some people really took offense, but others kind of took it in the spirit it was intended. It was just kind of a little chibe, you know.
Yeah, right,
I do
right.
it now with Brother Romney.
Doug, how about if we take up zeroing in on democratic socialism, and I'll ask you something like, you know, what's wrong with it? I mean, it's democracy. Everybody's for that. And socialism, isn't that nothing more than just caring for people and sharing what you've got and giving them free things?
Yeah. Well, that sounds wonderful. I'm sold. Let's do it. Oh, wait, it requires violence.
A minor point. At least to some.
Yeah.